Begin on Dafyu Chesamud Beis, right in the middle of our deliberation of whether the dead are aware of the events in this world. So the last incident we saw was about Ze'iri, who's... Yeah, whether you're allowed to keep your tzitzis out in the cemetery. That's the whole focus of the discussion. No, the Gemara said it very clearly as far from that angle. If they are aware, you have to pick them up. If they're not, you don't. That was clearly the discussion in the Gemara. Only have to take off your tzitzit, pick up your tzitzis on the assumption that they are aware. That's levels of Midas Chasidus. The question here is halacha. Those are levels of Midas Chasidus. So Maisa, there's no chiyuv not to hit ground that helped you bury a body of someone you killed. It's not a halacha. It's a fine level of Midas Chasidus. But here the question is halachically. It's an issue of Benodam Lachaveiroi. Don't be mitza'er a person, even if he's dead. So therefore we have to know, are they aware, and does it bring them tsar? So now, we saw that this girl who had died was aware that her friend would be coming soon. How was she aware? So Rashi says, she knew that the girl was very sick. I mean, it wasn't just that she had information from the upper world. She knew the girl was very sick. But the Gemara says not necessarily. Maybe she wasn't aware of anything going on in this world. Simply, they announced that so-and-so will be coming tomorrow. Meaning, could be that they get information in the upper world. The question is, do they actually sense, are they attuned to what's happening in this world? So, we, as of yet, don't have an answer to that. So, let's see.
What about the incident with the rabbi who was lying to sleep in the cemetery?
Oh, so that also, the Gemara ended up refuting that and saying that it's possible that in the interim someone had died, someone who had been alive at the time had died, and went up, when he came up, he told them about it. Now, yeah, there is certainly interaction between each other, as we'll see soon, but the question is, are they also aware of what's going on here? Are they in tune to that?
We say that she knew that her friend was sick.
Well, that was the question. Is it pshat that she knew that her friend was sick? The Gemara says not necessarily. Maybe she simply heard about it because they announced so will be coming soon. So we're going to continue trying to figure it out. We're going to see another incident now. We're on the 2, 4, 6, the seventh widest line in the Gemara. In the middle of the line, you got Toshma. Toshma, we're going to try to prove it from the following. Avuah de Shmuel. Shmuel's father is known as a very pious man. Now we're going to see one of the reasons why. When you had a young orphan, an underage orphan, Beis Din would take guardianship for that orphan. They would appoint a guardian. And not only that, Beis Din would take the estate of the orphans and would safekeep it for them until they'd be old enough. And the person that they used to keep it with was Shmuel's father. He was deemed the person trustworthy to be managing the assets of young orphans. What's that? Apotropos, that's right, Apotropos. Now, Kinach Nafshei, so he had a lot of, in those days it wasn't bank accounts, they actually gave him money, which he kept in his home. Now, Kinach Nafshei, when he died, Loi Havish Shmuel Gabei. Shmuel wasn't there. I guess it was unexpected. And there was nobody there to hear his instructions. And therefore, nobody knew where that money was. Then, Shmuel was suspected of taking the money. He was claiming, everybody asked Shmuel, where's the money? He said, I don't know. And they started calling him, Bal Ochil Zuze de Yasme, the eater of orphans' money. Shmuel's father died. Now they knew that he was reliable. He had a very, very good reputation. But when after he died, they came to Shmuel and they said, where's the money? He said, I don't know. They suspected that Shmuel had taken it and kept it for himself. But that they suspected the father himself.
Suspecting the worst was called Shmuel, the son of one,
and soon the orphan's
money.
Ah, I hear. I hear.
The basic question is this. When you got somebody with the status of Shmuel, how can you possibly suspect the father or something?
Well, the truth is, the question is even stronger than that, because Shmuel's father, even though, well, we'll see, so there's an interesting reason why he was called Shmuel's father, but he was a very, very great sage in and of himself. The truth is that his greatness was just not just on account of being Shmuel's father, but you're right, that is a valid question. And the answer to that question just has to lie in the more vulgar element of human nature, which, as we'll see soon, people like scandals. Now, I don't assume that this means that the more conscientious, that the more refined people of his community believe that. I assume that it means that the cheaper people, the guys who sit in the back of the shul schmoozing during Kriyas HaTorah, were saying these things.
Well, might have done such a thing and have been there.
Oh, right, right. Meaning that's definitely how I say, they're always the people who are looking for the good juicy story. Now, Ozal Abasrei Lachatza Moves. So Shmuel had to solve the issue. So he went after him to the place of the dead. We already saw this referred to also by Ze'iri. That's where Ze'iri went looking for his hostess who had his money, the place of the dead. So, meanwhile, we'll go with Rashi, who says that this simply means the graveyard. Omar Luhu. So he came to the graveyard. Now Rashi says something very interesting. He says that a person on the right spiritual level, when he came to the graveyard, he actually saw all the spirits of the dead there, hanging out together, Rashi says, sitting together, and, I don't know, farbrenging, and they're sitting together. And he saw them. Omar Luhu, so he said to them, Bayina Abba, I need Abba. He didn't mean Abba as in my father. Abba was his name. So Amule, they said, Abba Tuve Ikehach. There are plenty of Abbas here. We know who you mean. Omaluhu. So he said, Baina Abba Bar Abba. His name is Abba Bar Abba. Now that should boil it down more. Amule, so they said, Abba Bar Abba Nami Tuve Ikehach. Oh, there are a lot of Abba Bar Abbas here too. This was either a very big graveyard, according to Rashi. I think a place like Har HaMenuchos, this is quite conceivable. Or we'll see soon, there's a different explanation here. But meanwhile, we'll continue with the understanding that this is a graveyard, and a person of the right level can actually see the spirits who are there. Omalu. So he said, Ba'ina Abba Bar Abba Avua de Shmuel. I need Abba Bar Abba, the father of Shmuel. Heicha, where is he? Amrulei, so they told him, Solik l'mesivta devikia. He already went up into the heavenly yeshiva. He's not around here anymore. Adahachi, meanwhile, so here already I'll bring in the pshat that the Goin and the Ben Ish Chai both say, that this is not really about a specific graveyard. This is the place where the spirits gather before ascending to the upper world. There's a certain place called Chatzar Moves, the courtyard of the dead, where the spirits gather before ascending to the upper world. Some of them have to wait before they're granted entry, as we'll see soon. Some of them go straight in. Different people, different levels are in different places. But whatever it is, Shmuel knew how to access, how to get to that waiting room, if we'll call it that, where the spirits wait before they go up. And this is what's going on here. So the whole Gemara will be better understood according to that. If so, we understand. Yeah, the Abba Bar, it's not surprising that there were many Abba Bar Abbas there. There's all the spirits worldwide were in this place concentrated here. Now, meaning, not all the spirits worldwide, but all the spirits that couldn't go straight into Olam Haba for whatever reason. There's different bureaucratic issues, as we'll see soon. So, Chazya Adahochi, meanwhile, he saw a surprising presence there. Chazya Levi de Yosef Avroi. Levi was a close friend and colleague of Shmuel. He was one of the Gdolei Ador. And he saw Levi sitting outside. Meaning he did not go up to the yeshiva Shalmala, to the heavenly yeshiva. Omale. So he said to Levi, Amayas v'savroi. Why are you sitting out here? My time is alkis. Why don't you go up to the yeshiva? Omale. So he answered to him, Da Amrili, I have not yet been granted access. Da Amrili, because they told me, Kol ki hanach shoni deloy slikus lenesivta de rabbi efes. Let's stop for a minute and give a little bit of background. Rabbi Efes, at one point in Levi's life, Levi was one of the senior Talmid HaChamim of the time, and at one point, the Rosh Yeshiva, under whom everybody learned, I forgot who it was, died. And the next one to be appointed was Rabbi Efes, who was basically a colleague of Levi and of the senior Talmidim of the Yeshiva. So, there was a question between Rabbi Efes and Rabbi Hanina, who was actually Levi's chavrus, or kind of like Levi was closer with him. Rabbi Efes was appointed as the Rosh Yeshiva, and Levi stayed out of this tradition and lived with Rabbi Hanina. Okay. So he was now told, all those years that you kept out of the Bis Medrash while Rabbi Efes was the Rosh Yeshiva, la'achlishte l'data, you might not have realized it at the time, but you hurt his feelings. Now he wasn't doing it. What? You hurt his feelings. He wasn't doing it to hurt his feelings. He wasn't trying to spite him. He simply was learning with Rabbi Hanina. But whatever it is, they told him, l'maisa, you hurt his feelings, although, and therefore, for an amount of years, for that amount of years that you waited outside, mida keneged midi, you're going to wait outside the Bismedrash now as well, the heavenly Bismedrash, and you're not going to go in. So he had to wait for this amount of years to pass before he could enter. Okay, meanwhile, adahachi vahachi osavur. Meanwhile, Shmuel's father arrived. And Shmuel saw that his father was in a bittersweet state of mind. He was weeping and smiling at the same time. Omale, so Shmuel told him, "My time is kabochis. Why are you weeping?" So he answered, because I see you're going to be coming soon. Shmuel apparently was not that old yet at the time. Soon, quickly. So he told him, okay, so why are you smiling? He answered, because you are held in high esteem in this world. Ba'al Metuva, you're held in very high esteem in this world. Omale, Shmuel, always thought practical. Said, oh, I'm held in high esteem? That has an important implication. Ichashivna, if I'm indeed held in such high esteem, Na'ilua le'Levi, I'm requesting that Levi be admitted. Va'ilua le'Levi, so they let Levi in. Oh, so I deliberately didn't translate, meaning I didn't spell that out, because there's a little bit of ambiguity in the Mefarshim. Shmuel's father told him, I see that you are esteemed in this world. Which world was he referring to? Did he mean this world is what we call this world, or the world he was in? So most Mefarshim understand it that way, and that's how he was able, you know, that was his whole basis. He said, since I'm considered Chashiv in Olam Haba, I'm requesting that Levi be let in. But Rashi actually seems to understand that it means this world as in Olam Hazeh. Right, so that's what the Mefarshim ask. Rashi, we'll see soon why Rashi said this. We'll see soon what compelled Rashi to say this. But you're right, most of the Mefarshim say that simply understood. The whole point of the Gemara is that he was held in high esteem in the true world.
But he was already held in high esteem in this world.
What's that?
Shmuel was already held in high esteem in this world.
Right. He was held in high esteem in this world, but that doesn't always necessarily indicate that a person is held in high esteem in the next world too. Yeah. That's a chiddush. Yeah. Yeah, often it's the opposite, right? Yeah. So, Omalei. So whatever it is, Shmuel said, okay, time to get down to business. Enough of this. What?
How did Shmuel meet up with his father? His father had gone up to the yeshiva.
Right, so apparently they were able to summon him. Apparently, yeah, he came out to meet Shmuel. So, whatever it is, he said, all right, I came here for business. Omale, he said to him, Zuze de Yasme Heicha, where is the orphan's money? Omale, so he told him, now here we'll see the reason why they considered him trustworthy. Zil Shaklinu Ba'amse de Rechaya, go take it from the millstones. The millstones are a very heavy thing. And he had put the money underneath the stones. Now he said, when you go there, you're going to find three layers of money. Meaning, there's a layer of money, and then there's something in between, then there's another layer of money, then there's something in between, and then there's a bottom layer of money. So he told him, Eloi v'tatoi didon. The upper and lower layers of money are ours. Umitz ediyas. The middle layer is where I keep the orphan's money. So Amale, so Shmuel asked him, my time of this hachi, why'd you do it this way? Amale, so listen to his cheshbon. He said, Iginuve ganve mignevo medidon. It's a pretty good hiding place under the millstone, but should a ganev find it, let him find our money. He'll think that's the only layer. He sees a layer of money, he'll take it. He wouldn't think of checking, maybe there's more underneath. If a ganev finds it, let him take our money. Also, if it will be corroded by the earth underneath, let it hit our money. And the orphan's money will be padded in between, protected from robbers by the upper layer and protected from corrosion by the lower layer. Now, whatever the case is, whatever the case is, we see that they are aware of what's going on in this world. How do we see that? What do we see from this incident? That they were aware of what's going on in this world. What? That what? Oh, okay. Good.
This other part, she was talking to the father, and the father's relating something that he did.
Right.
That's not the same as that.
Okay, good. So, I'm going to say something else?
He came to meet him.
No, that's because Shmuel was already going into the realm of the spirits. That's something else. Shmuel, once he's in there. Yeah, he was there. He went into the realm of the spirits. Once he's already asking spirits and things, they hear him talking and they can go tell his father. He was already connecting with the spirits. That wouldn't be the raya. But Rashi seems to understand, this is why Rashi said what he said before, Rashi seems to understand that the proof that they know what's going on in this world was from the fact that he knew that Shmuel was held in high esteem. I mean, Rashi understood that he was saying that you're held in high esteem in Olam Hazeh. And the fact that he knew that indicates that he's aware of what's going on in Olam Hazeh. And that's problematic because of the points that we addressed before. And therefore Tosfos Taka says, like you said, that the point is, no, it's from the fact that he knew that Shmuel was on his way to die.
Yeah, but that they could have announced in Olam Haba.
Ah.
Much like with the conversation.
So why isn't it the same as the previous conversation? What's that?
It's that information from down here.
The fact that Shmuel is getting weak is... Meaning, the way we would understand that is he understood that Shmuel was aging beyond his years, and that he'd be dying soon. That's also the pshat in the previous story. They understood the girl was sick and she'd be dying soon.
I'm not sure. In Shemayim, they don't know. Here, they don't know. Who's going to live like that for years?
Generally, people have an idea. They could start guessing it, right? They're practical. It might not be 100%, but life insurance companies are willing to bet on it. And now, what did you ask? You
said, I said that just like the woman's conversation in the cemetery, we said they got that information from they announced it on Olam Haba that someone's coming, so they could announce that here too. Hey, Shmuel's coming soon.
Okay. So ultimately, that's going to be the Gemara's answer. Yet, we have to understand why is the Gemara bringing this when we just said it before. So Tosfos says this is not the same as the previous case. In the previous case, we were talking about a girl who was going to die tomorrow, which means that she was on her deathbed. She's on her deathbed, it makes sense that in Shemayim they're already making the arrangements, right? They're preparing her place. But Shmuel, he didn't say he's going to die tomorrow. He said, let's say in the next half a year or whatever it is. That's not the type of thing that would naturally be announced in Shemayim. Yet, let's see what the Gemara says. So therefore, they are understanding it that he understood that Shmuel was aging quickly, and he understood that in the next few months he's going to die. And the fact that he knew this indicates that he was aware of what's going on in this world. Okay, so let's see. Both of you are kind of making the same point. Let's see. So the Gemara says, no, all this is not a proof. Dilma Shani Shmuel. Maybe Shmuel's case was different. Kivan Dechashiv, because of his importance, Kadmi Umachrzi. They would announce already well in advance, Panum Mokon. Prepare a place. Meaning Shmuel was getting VIP accommodations. That is already the arrangements. I don't know how this works, but whatever it is, the arrangements already start well in advance. Yeah, that's right. And that is how his father knew. It could be that, yes, he had no this world, no Olam Hazeh information, but he saw that in Shemayim they were already preparing for a great event. Shmuel is going to be arriving soon. Let's note that. In Shemayim, let's chop that. It's a significant point. It's considered a great event when a great person arrives. We can bring ourselves to the level that that's how it would be. Right, they're preparing excitedly for a great event.
I don't understand. He's holding on to his apotropos for so much money. How would he not leave that information somewhere?
Right, so the Gemara does say it was circumstantial,
was
meaning
it
apparently.
So
it was unexpected circumstances, and it happened. And apparently, he wasn't at a point where he was expecting to go, and Shmuel wasn't around. L'chaire's plan was to tell Shmuel about it. It didn't happen.
Part of the Shmuel, he wouldn't tell anybody unless he really had.
Probably, yeah. Now, just note, the Gemara make an interesting point. This is a very interesting phenomenon that in all of Shas, but this is really the first time it shows up in Shas, that Shmuel's father was known as Abu the Shmuel. We don't really find such a phenomenon anywhere else. That he was known as Shmuel's father. That was his name in Shas. Even though he was a sage in his own right. He was a very pious man. He was known... He deserved to be known by his own name. Why was he called Avu de Shmuel? Shmuel's father. Rav Hai Goyin cites a very interesting tradition. Meaning that they knew, that not recorded in Shas, but what they knew had been passed down to them. That it was a very interesting incident. I'll take it. It's a very interesting little incident. Shmuel's father, Avu de Shmuel, we know that his name was Abba, but Avu de Shmuel was once away on business. He was far away from his home. And one day he was accosted by a non-Jewish woman who demanded that he have relations with her. She was trying to seduce him, but aggressively. Shmuel's father, before Shmuel was born. So, nothing doing. But there was something desperate about the way she was pushing him. So he told her, what's the big deal? What do you want from me? Why are you so desperate to do this? So she told him, she was some sort of stargazer or something, and she told him, I see that tonight you have the potential of fathering a child who will be one of the greatest wise men in the world. And that's why she was so desperate to seduce him. So he turned around, walked away, wanted to get home immediately because this was a window of opportunity that wasn't going to come back. But he was too far away from home. So he said a shame. He said a shame Hashem that shot him home. He arrived home towards evening, was with his wife, and returned with that same shame, and that was it. And his wife became pregnant. Now, his wife became pregnant. Nobody knew that he had made a 5-minute appearance, or it was probably a half hour appearance, from across the sea. It was usually a few months trip. They knew that he was away on business. He had been away for months. All of a sudden, his wife is pregnant. Very unpleasant. And in those days, you can get in trouble for that. So the Beis Din asked her, what's this? And she said that her husband came back. She told a tall tale. Her husband came back, was there for a night, and went right back. And nobody saw him. So they flogged her. And Shmuel said, Shmuel would note a certain effect that it actually had on him. She was pregnant with him. And then when her father came back, when her husband came back, he made a point of telling what happened, and he insisted on being called Avod Shmuel, father of Shmuel, in order to emphasize, yes, I'm the father of this child. And that was... Yeah. So that's the tradition cited by Rav Hai Goyin as to why he was called Avod Shmuel.
And without all this background and an impressive explanation, it was the more simple level. A father gets a lot of nachas when his son surpasses who he was.
So that's true.
That's like the ultimate compliment that now you're known by your son.
That's true. That's true, practically speaking. But the question is, does that justify a once-in-history phenomenon? Meaning, we should have seen it in some other instances,
right,
but we don't. Okay. We move on. Why isn't this Derech Shel HaMeisim? Why isn't this called Inquiring of the Dead, which is generally an Isser under Kishuv? The answer is Derech Shel HaMeisim means using specific magical procedures to do this. If a person simply has access to the spirits because he's on that level and he's able to converse with them because he sees them, that's not an Isser. The Isser is, the Mefarshim actually say that Derech Shel HaMeisim involves relating to the body. Whereas if a person just sees the spirit and wants to talk to it, that's fine. Derech HaMeisim is techniques that they use in order to, through by means of connecting to the body, they can get answers. But this person who is able to connect with the spirits, is able to see them, no problem in conversing with them and asking them questions. What's that? An Amora, yeah. Right, that's right.
The flood, Shmuel's mother before Shmuel was born. And without the father being there to explain.
Right. Because.
I wouldn't want to be one of them answering.
What's that?
I wouldn't want to be one of them answering to Hashem.
Well, the truth is that from their perspective, they did the right thing. Things were as clear as day. You see a woman whose wife, whose husband has been in the Orient for months, right? And all of a sudden she's up and pregnant. As far as they were concerned, things were clear. Right? They did what a Beis Din has to do. It was unfortunate. They did what a Beis Din has to do. I'm sure that they were very apologetic afterwards, but I don't think that anything could be held against them.
She told them the husband came for one night.
Yeah, but again, in those days...
And
again, in those days, it was basically impossible. It was a month's journey back. She said he showed up for half hour and then went back. It's basically impossible. Meaning the truth is that naturally the story couldn't have happened. It only happened because he made use of a shame, which is certainly something that, you know, the Bez are not factoring in. It wasn't, remember, there were no Concorde jets at that time. They were using the old jets with propellers. Okay. No, no, no. I was kidding. Okay. What's that? Oh, so the, well, first of all, there were no Edom, obviously. First of all, there were obviously no Edom and no Asro. Second of all, we're not talking about the time when the Sanhedrin was actually in effect. We're talking about a certain autonomous power that the Jews in Bavel had, were given by the government, but they didn't necessarily have the authority to do full din Torah. Okay. We move on. Lemaisa, we once again could not prove from here that yes, the dead are aware of what's going on in this world. However, the Gemara concludes as follows. If we remember, this whole debate began with Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia told him, keep your tzitzis in, or keep your tzitzis off the graves because it's insensitive to the dead. And Rabbi Yonasan expressed doubts. Are they aware of what's going on? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yonasan ended up retracting and did concede that yes, the dead do know what's going on. The Omar Rabbi Shmuel Ban Achmeni, Omar Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Shmuel Ban Achmeni said in the name of Rabbi Yonasan, Minayin lemeisim shemesaprin zeim zeh. How do we know that the dead converse with each other? Shenema, it says in the pasuk, Vayema Hashem Elof. Hashem said, this is the pesukim right before Moshe's death. Hashem says to Moshe, Zois ha'oretz asher nishbati l'Avraham l'Yitzchak u'l'Yaakov l'Emor. This is the land that I swore to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to say. Amai l'Emor. What does it mean that he swore it to them to say? Meaning there's nothing following. There's no... So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. We're saying that no, Hashem was telling Moshe this, telling him to say as follows: Lech emor lehem l'Avram Yitzchak u'Yaakov. Go and tell Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, Shvua shenishbati lachem, the oath that I swore to you, kvar kiyamtia livnechem. I have fulfilled for your children. Meaning, Moshe, you're dying now. You saw that I kept my promise, and therefore, go inform them. Now, v'isal gedaitech deloyadi, if you think that they are not aware of the events in this world, which means that they're completely detached from the events in this world, doesn't matter to them anymore. Kiyoma luhu mayhavi, what do they need to be told? They're already beyond all this. So therefore, apparently, no, they are still connected and they know what's going on. So the Gemara says, one minute, the other way around, we'll turn the table. Elamai diyadi. So what are you inferring? That they do know? So lavalei lameimar. Why would he have to tell them about this? If they know, they know. So The Gemara answers, you're right. They knew that the Jews had already begun the conquest, and it really was not essentially necessary to tell them that. But la'achzuke le'tivus ala Moshe, he wanted Moshe to get the credit. Meaning, yes, they knew that the conquest had already started, but yet Hashem, because of his love for Moshe, wanted Moshe to approach the Avos as Hashem's representative instead of carrying it out, in order to get that credit. That was just a very interesting point that Sidur Shel Shabbos, it's Apterov, makes here. He says that it's very interesting that this is the last pasuk right before the next pasuk in the Torah is, and Moshe died. It says Hashem told him, you know, this is the land that I swore to, and then it says Vayomos Moshe died. So the Apterov says something very, very interesting. He says Moshe was reluctant about dying because he had really still been hoping to go into Eretz Yisrael, right? Hashem made death easier for him by giving him a mission. He said, he gave Moshe one last instruction, one last mission. Moshe, I want you to go to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Oh, he was instructed by Hashem. He went, died, and went to tell them. This was classic Moshe, right? That's what he said. That's the sequence of the psukim. Hashem told him to tell somebody something in the next world. Moshe Rabbeinu died and went to tell. Very interesting chap. Okay. Now, we move on to a new discussion, which kind of connects to this whole question of whether or not the dead are aware of what's going on in this world. Omar Abi Yitzchok. Ah, so the conclusion is that yes, they are aware. That's the conclusion. That's the halacha as manifested in the fact that you're not allowed to perform mitzvahs in their vicinity, and that is taka the conclusion of the Gemara. Yeah.
Not just around the body.
Right. What we see from these Gemaras is that they're aware of what's going on in general in this world.
So therefore, never it says
this. What's that?
So therefore, never it says this.
After all, you got to do what Hashem says. No, but apparently it's still different showing it to their face. Yeah.
Could it be that from Siddiqui we thought that it would be a riot? Could they know? Doesn't it that any regular person knows?
Don't know. You'd have to know that. Meaning, all these things would make sense if we would know that to be the case. But apparently the Gemara is going with the understanding, with their biological knowledge of how dead people work, that this is something that would be universal, if it's so, I guess. Okay. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, this kind of builds off this discussion. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kol ha-mesaper acharei ha-meis, if a person speaks derogatorily about a dead person, if a person speaks lashon hara about a dead person, it's like talking about a stone. Very interesting. The essential halacha is that the Isra of Lashon Hara does not apply to dead people. Wait, what's that? The essential halacha. Soon we'll see what the halacha lamais is. But the essential halacha is that there's no problem speaking Lashon Hara about dead people. What's that? It's disrespectful, but it's not an Isra. Meaning, it's an issue of sensitivity. Well, let's see. Now, why is this? Ikeda amri de lo yadi. Some say it's because they're not aware. Meaning this would be based on the previous Gemara, but the previous Gemara concluded that they are aware of what's going on. Ikeda amri. So others say di yad ive lo yichpas luhu. Once they're there, they don't care anymore. You can talk about them; it doesn't bother them. So, meaning, I'll just put this into perspective. The definition of the Isra of Lashon Hara, halachically, is the way the Rambam puts it down, is, and this the Chafetz Chaim always draws on as the fundamental definition of Lashon Hara, is something that if were the person to hear it, that if the person you spoke about were to hear it, he would be distressed in some way. That is the definition of Lashon Hara. That's how the Rambam defines Lashon Hara. And therefore, when you talk about a person who would not be distressed even if he knew about it, there's no iser, theoretically. And therefore, there's no iser to speak about the dead. They don't care. Yet, lemaisa, as you pointed out, this is certainly a form of disrespect, but soon we'll see there are other issues involved. But Lamaisa is what the poskim call a chere min hakadmoinim. The kadmoinim, meaning after the time of the Gemara, I presume this is the Gaonim because the Rishonim are already discussing this, they put out and they did lay down an iser, a chayrim, against speaking Lashon Hara about dead people. So Lamaisa, Alach Lamaisa, it's also to speak Lashon Hara even about a dead person. But now we'll see that there's a little more to this. So the Gemara says, Ini. Is that so? V'omar Rav Papa is related. Chad ishtoi milse basrei demar Shmuel. There was a fellow who spoke disparagingly about Shmuel after Shmuel died. V'nofal kanye mitalala, as he spoke, a beam dropped from the ceiling, ubaz ela arneke demoiche, and it cracked his skull and it killed him. So apparently there is an iser here. So the Gemara says, Shani Tzuva Mirabanan. A Talmud Chacham is a different story. Because even though he doesn't care, they could Shabrichu Tova Biyikre. Hashem exacts his honor. He might not care, but you offended Hashem. And therefore, Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kol HaMesaper Achar Mitoson Shel Talmidei Chachamim, people who speak about, literally this means after the beer, meaning about a dead Talmud Chacham, Noifel BeGehenim, drop straight into Gehenim, Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, Vamatima Kalkiloisam, those who distort their bad ways, we'll explain what this Pasuk is saying soon, Yelichem Hashem Espoyale Oven, Shalem Al Yisrael, Hashem will lead them off with the evildoers, peace unto Yisrael. Now what does this mean? So this means as follows. First, the Gemara just expounds the pasuk to mean, Afilu b'shosh shalom al Yisrael, even when there's peace on Klal Yisrael, Yelichem Hashem Espoyal Yehoven, Hashem will take them off with the evildoers. But what's this pasuk saying? Let's just understand the pasuk. Pasuk says, those who distort their bad ways, Hashem will take them off with the evildoers. How is this understood as denoting a Talmud Chacham? So Rashi says, you have to know the beginning of the pasuk. The beginning of the pasuk says, Heitiva Hashem Latoiv, Hashem be good to the righteous. Vamatima kalkaloisam, those who distort their bad ways, meaning everybody has their faults, right? Even the righteous will have certain faults. But those who distort it, who pervert it, meaning those who magnify it, who blow it up to more than what it is, speak ill of the righteous unjustly, meaning they are distorting the righteous's bad ways. The righteous might have certain faults, but those who go magnifying it, blowing it up, and advertising it, Hashem will lead them off to Gehenna. Shalom al Yisrael. The Gemara stresses that this is even when there's peace in Klal Yisrael. Meaning, Tosfos says, as we just said before, essentially there's no problem with talking about dead people because they don't care. Right? Meaning, talking about a dead person won't cause quarrels. It's a peaceful form of Lashon Hara. Right? But yet, even though it'll remain peaceful, still the person who speaks this way will end up in Gehenna. Now, oh, what happens if a person does speak against does speak Lashon Hara about somebody? Against a dead person. So what seems from the Gemara here is that you didn't commit a crime against a dead person by speaking about him. You did not commit a crime against a dead person. It's more of a crime against Hashem, or in the case of a regular person, it's an issue of transgressing a cheirim, which is once again an issue of bein adam lamakom, if we'll call it that. And like all the way that the Mishnah Berurah puts it down, there's an hilchos lashon hara. This din is brought down. He says a person has to do tshuva. He doesn't mention going to ask mechila. So I don't know for sure, but my guess would be that this mechila applies to a person who you wronged in this world, whereas this might taka be more of an issue of bein adam lamakom, which just requires personal tshuva. But I'm not sure. I could try to research that. Bli neder.
Yeah, I just think about the story about Moshe.
That's right.
So the idea is, Walker Weber made the comment, but still the will is very asking for Mechila, as opposed to asking Hashem. So the same there that you're going to.
So therefore, I'll reiterate that I would like to research it. I will note, though, that the answer might end up being that we can't rule from stories, meaning we'd have to know if the story was quoted exactly accurately. It could be that really the story was, and he was told to do tshuva, but I'm not sure. I would like, but it's enough. We should research it. We should research it. Bli neder, I'm going to try to do so. Okay, now I'll add another point that the Mefarshim said, because really there's an underlying fundamental point here. Another explanation that the Mefarshim give here is that, again, the Gemara stresses, even when there's peace for Klal Yisrael, Hashem will take these people to Gehenna. What does peace for Klal Yisrael mean? So he told Tosfos' explanation, even though this is a peaceful form of Lashon Hara. Okay, but another explanation is that even when Klal Yisrael are in a situation where they're deserving of peace, where their merits well outweigh their averus, this is something that can end up tipping the scales. This is something of big severity that can end up tipping the scales. Now, what's the pshat of this? We have to realize today there's so much lack of sensitivity to this concept, because in general the whole Lashon Hara has become industrialized in our times, right? Media is one big Lashon Hara machine, right? And with internet, bichlal, it's one. Babel is hefker there. Used to be that at least it costed money to broadcast the Lashon Hara. Today you can say whatever you want about anybody, and it's right. But the concept of bizui Talmud Chacham, of disparaging a Talmud Chacham, is so severe. And today, unfortunately, it's just like so hefker. And you look, it's even in style. It's stylish, right? You see the vulgar who take delight, you know, the gleeful reports of any time they can find any sort of allegation, yeah, rushing off to. I remember a couple of years ago, there was an incident where a few rabbanim from America were accused of some form of money laundering or something, and they were like four rabbanim who were arrested in the Deal and Flatbush area. Four or five rabbanim, I forgot exactly how many, right? And of course the Jerusalem Post, big, gleeful, you know, they're Satan's representatives in this world. They're actually more on the outer force. They just give a slight indication of how the Israeli press works, but they do a good job. So, you know, the gleeful headlines, big headlines, you know, rabbis arrested. I just want the fine. There was a picture of like five, I remember the headline, I looked at it that day. There was a picture of like five men with long pace and beards and the long coats being led off in handcuffs. Anybody remember that? Yeah. I don't know who those people were. They weren't those Rabbanim. Because those Rabbanim of the Syrian community who don't look that way. They look very well groomed. You know what the problem was? That wouldn't have done for the Jerusalem Post. That wouldn't have done. To have people with stylish suits. The point is, we want to show what those, you know, what those rabbis are. We're going to have a picture of people with stylish suits. A person who might actually wear cologne. No. It blew my mind. I wasn't surprised, but it blew my mind. Outright, no, not outright, but sophisticated sheker. They want to get the effect in good. What they mean by rabbis. So they won't put in, they'll find someone, I don't know where they got that picture and who those people were. But it wasn't those rabbis. Right? But that's the picture that they had. Rabbis caught for this, and a big picture of those five people being let off in handcuffs, whoever they were, right? But that's again, okay, representative of in general how bris kusol aloshen, right? The Yetzirah. Now there's good reason for this, but we'll start from the other direction. Explain why it is that this can actually cause that even when the Jewish people have more merit, it can mamish tip the scales, make a complete comeback. Rabbi Yehuda says, what's the severity? Why is it that the concept of bizui Talmud Chacham, disparaging a Talmud Chacham, is so severe? He says, because such a fundamental aspect of a healthy running Klal Yisrael is when the Talmidei Chachamim are revered, when they're on a pedestal. Now this doesn't mean covering up. Talmud Chacham is, it's his responsibility to make sure that no covering up needs to be done. Right? That's not what it means. But today, even without that, when you're looking to pull someone down, when you have a need to pull someone down, Bris Krusel Aloshin. It works. It works. People believe things. People are quick to believe the things that they read, especially when it's in a paper, right? And but forget the paper. But the point is, that's part of a healthy running Klal Yisrael, and that's undermined when the pedestal upon which the Talmid Chachamim stand is undermined. Then Klal Yisrael, all their priorities get confused. When Talmid Chachamim are not, when the Torah leaders are not the revered class, not the admired class, all the priorities get confused, everything gets confused. That's why we have such a confused generation. And that will cause much of Klal Yisrael to deteriorate. Once those are not the role models, once those are not the admired people, once it's on the contrary, everybody's busy talking about, yeah, we know what those rabbis do. If they're not the role models, then who are the role models? That's a scary question to ask nowadays. Who are the role models? Scary question to ask. But whatever it is, that causes a general decay in Klal Yisrael, the phenomenon of Bizui Talmid Chachamim. And that's why, yes, you can have a situation where that's in Klal Yisrael, Shalom Al Yisrael, they're in a very good spiritual state. But once you have that decay of people speaking disparagingly about Talmid Chachamim starting to set in, then it can very quickly, the tables can very quickly be turned. It's a scary thing. Alright, we'll see a little bit more on this tomorrow. Thursday, Be'ezus Hashem. Okay.